This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's hour number two of Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and the NBA Finals are here. VSiN is doing a tremendous job of breaking it all down, from serious odds to matchup breakdowns. You'll find all of our NBA coverage right here on the VSiN Watch app, and if you're watching on the VSiN Watch app, if you're listening on SiriusXM channel 158 and so much more, you're going to be seeing a lot of this man the next few days because he does such a tremendous job here at the network. He's joining me on the Progressive Guest Line. We've got Dan Karpek aboard. He does a tremendous job on the NBA front and so much more. And Dan, it's great to get you aboard. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to breaking this game two down here.
Absolutely. And for game number two, I think that it's going to be interesting to see if one of the big heroes of game number one is going to be stepping up, because I was here live when that game was wrapping up on Thursday, and I just kept saying it. The Indiana Pacers don't get to that point to be able to pull back and win that game without Obi Toppin going off for five threes in game one, and I don't think that you want to take an alternate over of 4.5 threes on Obi Toppin in game number two, but I know you're looking at him to have himself another relatively solid game here in game number two.
Oh, yeah. Over 13.5 points plus rebounds just was the first thing I wrote down for this game. I need to get back on that, just like I did in game one. In game one, that was at 10.5, so that easily hit. But, you know, when we look back at game one here, and I kind of broke it down, I'm looking at this matchup, and I kind of listed, you know, 25 minutes of impactful play as kind of his ceiling. And guess what? He played exactly 25 minutes. He had 17 points on 6 of 9 shooting, 5 rebounds, 12 rebounding chances. And he's simply a better athletic and pace-footing matchup against this team than Miles Turner. If the Pacers want to continue running in transition and playing small, if you can recall at the end of that game, OKC went real small and Obi Toppin was playing the de facto five in Rick Carlisle's rotation, or in his lineup, I should say. I think this is certainly a guy to trust again, and he's going to get that low 20s minutes here in game two. Both of these teams, like I said, closed game one on those small ball looks. And despite this line opening at 10.5 last game and then jumping here to 13.5, you know, and sometimes in those situations you get a little bit wary. But I don't think that is too high to really you know, to fade in this spot here. Remember, he finished last series against the Knicks also with 15 points plus rebounds. So he had 11 points, 4 rebounds, and then 24 with 18 points and 6 rebounds. So he has a lot of confidence here in that secure role heading into game two. So I really like him once again here, points plus rebounds.
Yep, I love that look as well. Obi Toppin, since the back half of that New York Knicks series, has truly been tremendous, and I think that that's an amazing look. And something that I really took away from game number one is that the Indiana Pacers were able to get the job done, and though Tyrese Halliburton had that big shot to be able to give them the lead late with about 0.3 seconds remaining, he had a rather pedestrian game. And I know you're looking at Tyrese Halliburton having a little bit of a better game number two, but you're not looking specifically at the points. You're looking at him just all around having his imprints all around this game.
Yeah, over 29.5 points plus rebounds plus assists. He could get over this in points alone. We've seen him do that, but he did get over this in game one. So he had 14 points, like you said, very pedestrian night as a scorer, 6 of 13 shooting, but he had 10 rebounds on 13 chances, 6 assists on 15 potential assists, which is a stat that I love as well. So the volume was there. He didn't necessarily get all the help that he usually gets from his teammates, but that's exactly what I want to see here. Halliburton obviously has been one of the most clutch players. You could say he might be the most clutch player in NBA history this season, based on what he's been doing in these big moments here. But like, he's stuffing the stat lines here in all three of these categories throughout the game. He's leading his team in total passes by almost double the next guy. This is his offense. This was as high also as 36.5 in the Eastern Conference Finals. So don't forget that. We're getting this at a nice buy low spot here. And he's hit this in 13 of 16 tries in the playoffs. The only exceptions there, two blowouts and a 29 PRA effort. So just falling a little bit short there on one of those as well. So 13 to 16 tries, great spot in game two here again, as they try to, you can't count this Pacers team out. I don't know what the heck is going on, but you know, I gotta like him heading into game two.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. And for Tyrese Haliburton, he has a chance to be able to go off for a triple-double on any given night. So I absolutely love that look as Dan Karpuk. He does an amazing job here at the network. He's joining me right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And when I announced on Twitter/X that you were going to be joining me, you had mentioned this, that you're going to be revealing what your favorite prop of the entire NBA playoffs is. So give it to me right here, Dan. What are you taking a look at? Because I know that it's pretty good plus money, and you're loving this one.
Isaiah Hartenstein, double-double.
Love it.
Plus 600. It is amazing. There's so much value here. I don't want to over-exaggerate things, but this might be the play of the entire season for me. Actually, that was like a Zach Edey double-double earlier in the season, but we won't get into that. but this double-double here is really jumping out at me. He had 9 points, 9 rebounds in just 17 minutes off the bench in game one. He led the Thunder with 12 rebounding chances despite those that limited run that he got. And he's going to have an instant impact once again here in game two, especially since Indiana dominated the glass 56-39 and had 13 offensive rebounds, which led to 12 second chance points here. I think Mark Dignault's really going to make a little bit of an adjustment here. Like when we think about game one to game two, these coaches are definitely going to make some minor tweaks. I think that Mark Dignault is certainly going to give him some more minutes, maybe in the 21 to 23-ish range, just based on what we've seen in the past. But that should certainly be enough for him to get a double-double here. He's been one of the most efficient bigs in the playoffs and throughout the regular season, but in the playoffs, 9.2 points, 7.9 boards in 23.5 minutes per game, shooting 62.1%. 15.8 rebounding chances per contest, and he's one of the best screeners in the league. That's something that can earn him extended floor time in half-court sets here as OKC looks to improve a bit. Despite having two double-doubles in the postseason, just two so far, but he had 28 in the regular season. This is a really, really good buy-low spot based on role efficiency. And I think that, like I said, that game two adjustment is coming to match Indiana's physicality inside. I really, really love this at plus 600. And that's why I'm calling it the play of the playoffs so far.
Well, Dan, you've got me sold on that. You did a great job of breaking that down. And I do think that Hartenstein is going to be able to sell a big game here in game number two. So love that look. And you were telling me off air, you've got some very interesting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander stats that you want to share with us from game number one. And it's a big reason why I'm going to be taking a look at this prop for game number two. So talk to me about Shai and talk to me about some of those interesting stats that you had dug up.
Yeah, yeah. So looking at game one here, you know, the OKC lost this game with Shai taking 30 shots. You know, I 38 points on 30 shots. I don't think we're going to see that once again here in game two. You know, he went 7 of 8 from the free throw line. He was very aggressive. But what really jumped out to me here is he drove to the basket 27 times, which was far above his season average and playoff average, which was identical at 20.6. He went 8-for-17 shooting on those drives for 20 points, but he didn't record a single assist off of those drives. So he had just 3 assists, but he had 11 potential assists elsewhere on other plays, despite dominating the ball throughout. That's the type of untapped upside that I want to exploit here on drives in the regular season and in these playoffs. He's averaged just a tick under 2 assists on those particular plays. But I definitely think, that, you know, like I mentioned, there's going to be some adjustments. We all know there's going to be adjustments heading into game two here. But if Hartenstein's on the floor for longer, you know, hopefully with that double-double prop that I love, he'll be on the floor more than usual. When you look at a guy like Chet Holmgren, who really struggled in game one, what's a great way to get those guys going? Have SGA drive down the lane, easy alley-oop, easy conversion. I think we're going to see this defense collapse a little bit on Shai. I think, you know, 8 of 17 on drives for 20 points. I think they're going to collapse a little bit. And you have to think guys like, you know, Lou Dort, yes, he's not going to go 5 for 9 from deep again here. But those easy looks around the rim are something that I think OKC is going to really look at here. And like I said, try to use Chet above the rim like they have so effectively throughout the rest of the season. But over 6.5 assists, I think, is very fair. He had 8 assists exactly on an average of 12.5 potential assists here against the Pacers in the regular season. Went over the 6.5 mark in 4 or 5 games against Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals, and he only fell short once with exactly 6. So he's going to get a ton of attention in game 2. He's going to have the ball in his hands, and I love the setup for him to distribute the ball more effectively this time around and you know, get some those easy looks that I think are going to come his way.
I love the look, Dan, and we've got about 45 seconds remaining. You've got one other prop that you're taking a look at. It's Alex Caruso. So lay on me what you're looking at with Mr. Caruso.
Yeah, over 12.5 points plus rebounds. Finished game 1 with 11 points on 3 of 8 shooting, 4 of 5 from the free throw line, 3 rebounds on 8 rebounding chances as well. His scoring is steady. They need him to be on the floor in terms of what he could bring on the defensive end. So he played 28 minutes in game 1. And he's going to flirt with 30 plus minutes again in this one in game 2. He's gone over this number in 12 of 17 playoff games. That's a 70.6% hit rate. So I got to love Mr. Caruso to be out there on the court. And we know that Mark Daigneault trusts him. They have that past with each other in the G League there. So I really think I'm going to just continue to go with the over on points and rebounds for Mr. Caruso.
I love it. Dan Karpuk doing such great work here at VSiN, taking a look at the NBA. And coming up next, we go from the NBA to the MLB on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be joined by Dan Karpuk in the last segment. He's doing great work here at the network, taking a look at all things on the NBA front. Some really good props there. And if you miss any of it, you want to go to VSiN.com/podcast and download the podcast. As every single show and every single hour that we do here at VSiN, all available in podcast form. He was great. So big thanks to Dan for joining me in the last segment. And how about if we do first things first, before we go anywhere else, give some love to where it's deserved. Everyone behind the scenes, they do such an amazing job of giving you all that you hear on VSiN all throughout the day. All these amazing shows, they would not be what they are without the backbone, in my opinion, of VSiN. All the great producers, all the great behind the scenes work. It is amazing, as we've got a little bit of a confusing one. We've got John and Johnny. You've got my associate producer, John, and then my main producer, Johnny. So we've got J Squared helping out with regards to this show. They do a tremendous job of making sure that I know exactly where the heck I'm going, that I'm not like veering off into space or something like that. And that's easy for myself. So they do an amazing job of making sure that everything is up and running. I know that Johnny does a great job of being able to book all the guests. And these guys, they do such an amazing job of setting up a great show for myself. So I really appreciate them. If you're listening in podcast form on Sirius XM channel 158, what have you, the reason why the audio is always so crisp and clean is so crisp and clean is because of Chris. And whenever I say clean instead of clean, you know what, that gets picked up very, very cleanly as well. So Chris, he's doing an absolutely amazing job. Always appreciate him. And then this might be the hardest task here at the network, making myself look halfway presentable in a moving picture slash video format. For those of you guys watching on the VSiN Watch app, what have you, YouTube TV, Jarens along with Al, they're doing an amazing job in terms of making myself look halfway presentable. And on top of that, all the odds that you see on the screen, they're always up to date thanks to them. So big thanks to everyone behind the scenes. They do such an amazing job, and they're always on point with regards to how they have these shows operating. So that means I need to be on point with regards to my picks. So I plan on doing that. First things first, before you dive in on the baseball front, I was talking in hour number 1 with Lou Fenicaro about the late night fights here in UFC 316. The O'Malley fight is going to be getting going in the next few minutes. I'll update you when we get a decision there. But Kayla Harrison, second round submission with about 5 seconds remaining in the round. She's able to submit Juliana Pena. So Harrison now takes over that belt, and she had cut quite a bit of weight to be able to make this fight, and she was just very, very dominant. Again, if you didn't see the pre and post, shall we say, weigh-in photos of her, just absolutely wild. If you want to see a body transformation within a few hours, that was ridiculous what I saw. So she was able to get the job done. She gets a win, and we're going to look to this to be able to get the job done, as I've got my VSiN write-ups for this MLB Sunday all up on the website, and I've got articles every single day. I take the Bill Belichick approach, no days off, and we were taking a look at this one for our Saturday. It came through in terms of the over of the Angels versus the Seattle Mariners, and we're going to run it back. 973, 974 on the card. It is the Halos. They're going to be playing us to the Seattle Mariners with old George Kirby going for Seattle, and Tyler Anderson, he's on the bump for the Halos. This was an opener of an 8.5 with regards to total. Still seeing one or two straight 8.5s, but mostly it's 1-9. And if you're finding the 9, you're going to get that over at right around even juice. And with the Seattle Mariners, they're between minus 138 to minus 150 favorites. Plus 123 to plus 130 is that number on Los Angeles. And as long as I'm able to get a plus 130, I'm going to be willing to dive in on the Angels on the money line. But what I really wrote up here is the over, because man, you've got yourself an LA Angels team that they are very all or nothing at the plate right now. For the LA Angels, they have been very good in terms of their overall power. If you look at home runs just on a per at-bat basis, so the percentage of your at-bats that result in a home run, the Angels are number three in the league with 3.9% of their at-bats resulting in a home run. The only teams that are higher are the New York Yankees and the LA Dodgers. That tells you just the sort of power that this team has. Now, you've got a lot of guys that are striking out, and you've got a lot of guys that aren't moving the line, as Ori Soler had to be removed from the game on Saturday, so you do want to be noting that. But I mean, you still have a lot of guys that will be able to supply 9-plus home runs for you. Soler was one of those guys. Logan O'Hoppe, 14-plus home runs. He's been hitting for about a 250. Zach Neto has been able to give you 10 home runs. He's moved line hitting a 275. Not as much power with this guy, but Nolan Chunall, about a 380 on base, but Taylor Ward, 17 home runs. He's been supreme there. And then Joe Adell set fire to the rain with multiple home runs on Saturday. He's up to 11. But again, you got so many of these guys that they're just hitting for any average whatsoever. Adell is hitting a 219. You've got Mr. Ori Soler was removed from the game on Saturday, hitting a 217. Taylor Ward at 264 on base. Mike Trout is hitting a 215 this year, double-digit amount of homers. So that's been a little bit of an issue for you. And for Seattle, how about big dumper Cal Raleigh? 25 home runs this far this season. He's on pace for 64 home runs. That would set the new American League record if he does that. Like, that's how good he's been this season. Then you've got plenty of other guys that'll be able to spy for you. Matt J.P. Crawford give you a 395 on base. Now, Ori Polanco has been going down the toilet bowl a little bit as Julio Rodriguez has been able to ascend, but both of those guys hitting between about a 245 to a 255. You got 10 home runs apiece out of both of those guys. Randy Arozarena doesn't hit for average, but about a 340 on base as well. And I just take a look at these two pitchers, and I don't want any part of an under with either of these guys on the mound. For George Kirby, when it came to the 2023 and 24 seasons, George Kirby was great. 2025, George Kirby sucks. Like, George Kirby has had three starts as far this season. He is right now rocking an 8.56 ERA with a 5.64 fielding independent. It's clear that something went wrong with his rehab, because even when he made his three rehab starts with the Tacoma Rainiers, he was getting lit up like a Christmas tree. He had a 70 ERA out there in the PCL league, which that's actually a juice ball league. You do want to be noting that for when you take a look at these guys for going from the minors to the majors, but I mean, he just has not been good. He's now giving up 2.5 walks per 9 innings. That's more than double his career average. He's giving up 2 home runs per 9 innings. And I always make fun of Antonio Sensatello for being a human pinata for giving up 15.2 hits per 9 innings. He's given up 13.6 hits per 9 innings. I mean, if Antonio Sensatello is a massive human pinata, he's at the very least a minor human pinata at this point. And then for Tyler Anderson, this guy has been doing for regression for so long. Like, he has been avoiding the regression monster, much like you're trying to avoid, like, going to the dentist. Like, it's been absolutely insane what we've been seeing out of him. 386 ERA and a 499 fielding independent. Like, last year he had a fielding independent that was darn near a point higher than his ERA. He had that magical year with the Dodgers where he won 15 games. His fielding independent did not match up with his ERA. Now, you'll sometimes find this with off, shall we say, the sinker ball pitchers, the off-speed guys. But that said, he has now given up at least 3 runs. Now, this includes unearned runs in 4 of his last 5 starts. And it does appear as though he is starting to experience a regression that he should be. Only getting about 7 strikeouts per 9 innings, 3.6 walks per 9 innings, a home run and a half given up per 9 innings. And this is an LA Angels bullpen that, again, newsflash, they're not good. They had to use up Reed Detmers on Saturday, and Reed Detmers is right now giving you about a 5 ERA. You've got Brockenroll Burke. You've got Hector Neris. You've got the corpse of Hunter Strickland, all these guys I don't trust. And pretty much out of guys that have seen at least 10 innings thus far this season, Connor Brogdon is the only one with an ERA below a 4.50. Kenley Jansen is not trustworthy, and we've seen the Seattle Mariners bullpen start to act up a little bit. Have a little bit more faith in them, because ever since coming off the injury list, Matt Brash has yet to give up a run. He's been rock solid. Andres Munoz has been one of the best closers in all of baseball, but now you've got Colin Snyder on the injured list. Trent Thornton has been a little bit up and down. Carlos Vargas has been solid, but I do take a look at this spot. I do think that for George Kirby, he's just not trustworthy right now. I need to see a good start in order to restore George Kirby to anywhere near where he was last season. So being able to get a plus 130, I'm going to be willing to ride with that money line. And with regards to Soto, seeing that at a 9 right now, you're able to get that at even money juice. I do like the over. And sometimes you just need a boost, and Edge Boost, they're able to supply that, because Edge Boost is the first ever bank account that is built for bettors, ensuring that all gambling transactions are approved. No usage fees, no minimums, earn cashback rewards, 100% approval for all betting deposits. Sign up over at edgeboost.bet and utilize our promo code of CASH, C-A-S-H, that gets you a dollar-for-dollar match on your first deposit of up to $25. And that is over at edgeboost.bet, promo code of CASH, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Eeps Peterson, right here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. How about if we start off with this game and we'll wrap this up on the flip side, because we are just seeing this game coming onto the board. It is the Kansas City Royals going up against the Chicago White Sox, as Michael Lorenzen is going to be getting the start for the Kansas City Royals, and Mike Vasil is going to be getting the start for the Chicago White Sox. Right now, with the White Sox opening up at about plus 134 to a plus 138, anywhere between about minus 154 to minus 164 is that number on the White Sox, and I'm not going to quite be able to get there on the White Sox on the money line or anything like that, but Mike Vasil has actually been a really good long reliever for the White Sox that they're probably going to give him an extended look here in terms of a start. And Mike Vasil has actually been halfway decent. You might be looking at a little bit of something here, and then, well, you've got the rest of the Chicago White Sox being the rest of the Chicago White Sox, but I mean, this man deserves a little bit of credit. He's come up to the big league level, a little bit of a young 25-year-old, and he's right now sporting a 189 ERA. Now, is he doing for regression? Yes. 431 field independent, giving up 5 walks per 9 innings. He's not getting a lot of swings and misses, but in 38 innings, he's given up just 2 home runs this far this season. This is a total that I'm seeing at 9. You've got 2 absolutely anemic offenses. I'm going to be certainly in on the under. I'll tell you a little bit more about that on the flip side, and then we're going to hit some more great Sunday baseball games with all 30 teams in action on this Sunday on the flip side, right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got ourselves a ton of great baseball that is going to be going down on this Sunday, so we have to highlight that, but we do have to highlight in 15 minutes as well what we're going to be seeing on the NHL front, and we're going to be doing that with one of our favorites. Jonathan Davis has been doing just such an amazing job on the hockey front here at the network. He's going to be joining me in 15 minutes. I know he also does some great work over at SiriusXM with the host of the Ice Cap Show over at SiriusXM, so we're going to be talking about that with him and so much more. It's been a great finals, and I personally am sitting on Sam Bennett 30-1 to be able to win the Conn Smythe Trophy. I know that he was talking up that one as well, so we're both in lockstep there, and he's been joining me every Saturday for, like, I believe now 15 straight Saturdays, so always great to be able to get him aboard, but always great to be able to have this MLB action as well, as we left off talking about the Royals and the White Sox and the fact that seeing this total at 9, I really like the under. And as a matter of fact, even if we got an 8.5, because right now it's shaded down to about a minus 120 to the under, I would still be looking at the under, because you have a pair of teams that just aren't hitting right now. Now, I will say this for the Chicago White Sox. They've been significantly better at home rather than on the road. And by that, I mean they quite literally have as many road wins as the Colorado Rockies right now. 6. Yeah, when you're in that sort of a scenario where you've got as many wins as the Colorado Rockies in any sort of split, you know that you're going the wrong way down a one-way street. But for the White Sox, they're averaging about 4 runs per game at home. Problem is, they've been averaging about 2.9 runs per game away from home, but it doesn't matter whether the Kansas City Royals have been at home, on the road, on planet Pluto, they have not been able to generate much offense. 3.37 runs per game this far this season, that is 27th in the big leagues. Now, you've got Vinny Pasquantino, who's been able to give you a little bit more. He's up to 10 home runs this year, but Bobby Witt Jr., for as great as he has been in so many different aspects of things, just 7 home runs this year. You just expected a little bit more. I mean, for a mere mortal, 350 on base, those 7 home runs, I mean, that would be a really good just sort of start to the season. But, I mean, for Bobby Witt Jr. Sanders, he's been a little bit down. And then you've got, for the Royals, quite a few guys are actually doing an okay job of moving the line. Salvador Perez is not one of them, man. He looks completely washed at this point at the plate, but we've got a guy like Miguel Garcia, who's been able to hit 300. Drew Waters at the bottom of the lineup, along Kyle Isbell, are both hitting about a 270 or so, but just really not a lot of power on this team. They call up Jack Caglione. He's been having a little bit of a struggle. He had that one RBI early on, but he's been having a little bit of issue, and you're going to find that with these prospects. Like, don't give up on a guy like Jack, like Caglione, quite yet. You remember when Jackson Holliday was called up to the big league level last year? He was out hitting. Heck, I mean, there was a guy by the name of Mike Trout that struggled the first time he was called up to the big league level, and he turned out just fine. So the first time that someone is a highly touted prospect and they don't necessarily boom right away, especially at the plate, don't worry about that. Not everyone can be Paul Skeens, or back in the day, I still remember Steven Strasburg and that debut of, like, man. I mean, that was just absolutely supreme. But that said, when it comes to the Chicago White Sox, lineup is looking a little bit better. Mike Tauchman comes off the injury list. He's been able to give you about a 4 on base. Andrew Benintendi was dealing with an injury. He's been able to give you 6 to 7 home runs. He's starting to move line for the team. Now, you still have Luis Robert, who's hitting .181. Like, I recognize he's been able to swipe 21 bags. This guy's hitting .181 with 5 home runs. Like, I still am a believer of this. Sometimes when you're on a terrible team, this stink just seeps right into you. I think that the full amount of the White Sox stink over the last few years has just absolutely, he soaked it up like a sponge. Like, man, he has been nowhere to be found. And then you've got Josh Rojas, who's sitting below the middle sign of 200. Michael A. Taylor has been giving you a big nothing burger. And for Vasil, I mean, he's been rock solid, but he hasn't really gotten north of 4 innings. And even though he's giving you that sub-2 ERA, I do think that that's doing for a little bit of regression. And you just take a look at the rest of the bullpen of this team, and you got the likes of Jared Schuster, Brandon Isert, a pair of guys. They're rocking north of a 4.45 ERA. They were trotting out there towards the beginning part of the year by Clevenger in the bullpen. That clearly did not work out for them. So now they've got the likes of Cam Boozer and Steven Wilson. It's just not great, to say the least. But what has been really good, and it's a big reason why I'm going to be willing to back the Kansas City Royals at even money or better at the run line. I'm right now seeing this at circa a +102. I would, at the very minimum, need to get any sort of plus number to be able to take a shot on the run line, but we're fine that. But with the Kansas City Royals, top 18 with regards to bullpen ERA, Lucas Sersich, Carlos Acevedo has been a really nice 1-2 punch in the 8th and 9th inning. Now, Lucas Sersich lands on the injury list. That's a little bit of an issue, but being able to take his role, someone like Steven Cruz, who's been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. Daniel Lynch has been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. You've had a lot of guys being able to mix and match. Jonathan Bolin has been relatively solid in the bullpen. And for our good friend and Michael Lorenzen, has not necessarily been the most savory of years for him. He's right now posting up a 5.12 ERA. Strikeout numbers have never really been supreme with him. He's been getting about 7 or so strikeouts per 9 innings. And you take a look at him on the road, this is where things really balloon, as he's giving up north of 2 home runs per 9 innings away from home. But other than really Miguel Vargas, who's been able to give you 8 home runs thus far this season for the Chicago White Sox, you don't have a lot of guys who are giving you a lot of power either. So I think that should be able to mitigate that. I'm taking a look at this total of 9, and I like it under. And anything of even money or better, looking at the Royals with regards to that run line. And what else we're taking a look at is being able to save you guys some money, because if you sign up for a VSiN Pro subscription, we're going to save you $41 off the annual price. Typically, it's $20 a month. We're going to give you this for $199, and we're going to throw in a kicker, because Josh Applebaum, he does such tremendous work here at the network. He is going to be putting out the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. That is going to be a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smart NFL bets. You want to sign up right now to be able to get access to all that we do here at the network. a daily best bet email with all of our plays from VSiN show hosts and guests, real-time betting splits via DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access via the VSiN Watch app, and the NFL betting guide, which we have coming out July 1st. So that's going to be out in about 3.5 or so weeks. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe, utilize the promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K. That gets you the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook and $41 off the annual price over at VSiN.com/subscribe, B-O-O-K, with that promo code, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Epps-Peterson, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got ourselves a very interesting game with regards to this one as well. That's going to be coming up for Sunday, as there's not a lot of places that have posted up the opener here, but now we're starting to find it. It is the Milwaukee Brewers going up against the San Diego Padres. This is 951, 952 on the card, and this number has been all over the place, as a lot of places were thinking that you were going to be getting Aaron Civale at first. It ends up it's going to be Freddy Peralta on the bump for the Milwaukee Brewers. And right now, this total in most places is an 8. And with the Milwaukee Brewers, you're finding them on the money line right around about a minus 155 to a minus 164. There were some places that were posting this up at like a minus 120. And the market in general was just confused as to whether or not it was going to be Peralta or if it was going to be Aaron Civale. So you had some places that opened this thing up at like a minus 120, some places that opened this thing up at a minus 160. So this number has been up, down, all around. Right now, I just can't lay this big of a money line with the Brewers, as it's going to be Mr. Ryan Bergent who's going to be getting the start for the San Diego Padres. And if you're looking to lay a run half with the Brewers, you're going to be finding that right around about a plus 130 or so. If I'd be able to get like more of a plus 135 to a plus 140, that'd be my beginning buy point there. So we're going to see how this progresses overnight. But for Freddy Peralta, I honestly do have a little bit of concern here. I recognize that the first two games of this series have gone under. The regression monster is hungry, and I think that he's hungry for a little bit of Freddy Peralta here. Guy that's posting up a 2.92 ERA, but it doesn't sound bad, but his 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings is a career low for him. He's been laboring through a lot of innings. He's given up 3.7 walks per 9 innings. That's always been an issue for Freddy Peralta. Freddy Peralta has never been Captain Command, but that said, with this Brewers bullpen being much worse this year than it has been in past years, they no longer have Denville Williams, which at this point that actually might be a good thing, but I mean, like last year, you had Elvis Piero, Yul Piatek, who were so good in the bullpen. These guys were abject disasters this year that currently aren't with the big league squad. You've had Jared Koenig regress a little bit. Now, Trevor McGill, Nick Mears, along with Abner Uribe, have been having a sub-3 ERA. Uribe, you can throw him in like any situation, and he's going to be able to do a good job, but this has not been the same team here in general. And for Bergent, it's a little bit of a man of mystery, as he was posting up about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings at the minor league level. He has seen one start, and in that one start, gave up 2 runs over the course of 5 innings. Didn't light the world on fire, certainly didn't embarrass himself. And it's a San Diego Padres bullpen that, if you look overall for the season, they're right around about the top 10 in terms of bullpen ERA. They did yak away that game on Saturday, which that's not great. And Jason Adam was a big reason why. A little bit shocking because he's posting up a sub-225 ERA, but Robert Suarez, still one of the better relievers that you're going to find in all of baseball. He has been able to give you a sub-275 ERA along Jeremiah Estrada. What has been interesting is that the Padres have been league average in terms of their offense. You've got Fernando Tatis Jr., who missed the game on Saturday, along with Gavin Sheets combining for 24 home runs. And Manny Machado is starting to find a little bit of power. Manny Machado up to 9 home runs, hitting above a 300, but you've been having to mix and match with regards to Southfield. You've got Jackson Merrill back in the fold, who's hitting a 300, but again, down with his power. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, the one thing that they do a good job of is running and getting themselves in scoring position. You've got 4 separate guys, Sal Frelick, along Jackson Chirio, Christian Yelich, and Bryce Turang, who have all been able to give you at least 10 stolen bases. And Yelich is a big reason why the Brewers have been behind this surge, where they won like 8 straight games. They've been able to win something like 10 out of their last 13. He's up to 13 home runs this season. The team comes and goes as he does. Rhys Hoskins is moving the line. I do think that they get to Bergen. I do think that Freddy Peralta experiences that regression as well. Semi total at 8.4, so at the 8, I like the over. And for the Brewers, if we can find, like I said, more like a plus 138 run line, we'll be looking there. But where we're looking next is on the ice. Jonathan Davis does tremendous work here at the network looking at hockey. We're going to break down game 3 of the Stanley Cup final with him on the flip side on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. The Stanley Cup Final is here. Stay ahead of every matchup with sharp betting analysis from all of our Visa experts. Check out all of our NHL playoffs right here on the Visa Watch app. And this man is as sharp as they get, as we've got on the Progressive guest line right now, Jonathan Davis. He has been joining me on all these Saturdays throughout really the entirety of the winter and the summer. He has always made the time for me, and he has been tremendous with his picks. He also does a tremendous job over at SiriusXM as well with the Ice Cap. And Jonathan, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Oh, I always say, Greg, it's a great time. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking with some buddies, and I'm not a big NBA guy, but after watching that game on Thursday night, I'm like, okay, the NHL's got, you know, they've got a lot to follow up on for Friday, and they did their darndest. And, you know, unbelievable double overtime game on Friday night. I don't anticipate we're going to see overtime in game three. I just think that we're going to have some tired bodies, even with the extra day off for both these teams.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because right now we're seeing a goal total of 6.5 here in game number three. I was thinking, because of the fatigue from game number one, that perhaps game number two would go under. It certainly did not. But is that perhaps an angle to take a look at for game number three, with both of the first two games going to overtime, that maybe it just leads to these guys being a little bit more tired and a few fewer shots on goal for game number three?
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, Greg, you know, here's the one thing. Florida, after a loss, I think in the playoffs this year, had every game had a combined score of 6 or more. So I wasn't surprised that we had a game that had 7 goals in game number two. I think the extra day off definitely benefits both teams. I think, you know, we'll still see high octane offenses. I mean, I think it's now 7 of the last 8 meetings between the Panthers and the Oilers have gone over the total. Look, I could never bet under. If you want to bet under for game three based upon what you're suggesting, which I'm not saying it's wrong, but be careful. Just because these two teams have had a propensity of playing games to go over the total.
Absolutely, and I think that brings up a good point as well, and I talked to you a little bit off air. One bet that I've right now got in terms of the Stanley Cup Final is Sam Bennett. I was able to get him at 30-1 to be able to win the Conn Smythe Trophy, and now he's down to, in a lot of places, right around about 6-1, and what you just laid out, because if there is a favor for the Florida Panthers right now, it's Sergei Bobrovsky. Do you think that actually hurts his candidacy in terms of winning the Conn Smythe Trophy, just because we have seen so many goals on both sides, and I think that's a little bit harder for a goalie to be able to win the Conn Smythe with the way that this Finals is playing out right now?
Well, I think in the case of Bobrovsky, I think he's actually played really well. And even though he was touched up for 4 goals in game number two, he made a number of big time saves to keep the game close. And really, when it was 3-2, 2 minutes into the third period of game number of the last game, he made a big stop on Evan Bouchard to keep it a 1-goal game and allow his team to eventually tie and then take the lead. So I'm not concerned about the number of goals that he has given up, because it's really, a goalie will tell you, Greg, at this time of the year, it's not about how many goals you give up, it's how many wins you get. And even last year in the playoffs, you know, the save percentage for Stuart Skinner was better than Sergei Bobrovsky's, but Bobrovsky had the all-important one more win and Stanley Cup, you know, with his name on the Stanley Cup. In the case of Sam Bennett, I mean, this is the guy that has set an NHL Stanley Cup playoff record with 12 road goals. That's the most ever in Stanley Cup playoff history. He scored a road goal in 5 consecutive games. He scored all but one of his goals on the road. So, I mean, look, I have Bennett at 39-1. Bennett's anytime goal prop has been, you know, it was 230 in game number two, which was ridiculous. But let's keep in mind, and maybe something to look at, maybe you do lay off of him to score a goal in games 3 and 4 just because he's only got 1 home goal in the playoffs.
Yep, I think that is such a great look by you. As joining me on the show, we do have Jonathan Davis. He does a tremendous job here at VSiN, taking a look at this great game of hockey, along with that SiriusXM as well. He's joining me on Cashin' Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and just the dynamic in general between these two teams has been absolutely amazing. And how do you take a look at just the way that Edmonton has been able to put Sergei Bobrovsky and company under so much duress? Because the big takeaway that I've had in the first two games of the series, and you pointed that out so well, even though Bobrovsky has given up some goals, he's been able to do a good job of just staying in net, but just the overall attack of the Oilers has really been second to none, the way that they're able to just find so many ways to be able to get shots on goal.
They have. They put up a number of shots, and conversely on the Florida side, you know, look, game two is their trademark. You know, their coach, Paul Maurice, there's a great clip of him from the Amazon video last year that was done by the NHL, where you hear Paul Maurice, their coach for Florida, saying, pound the bleep out of them, because it's not about them feeling it now. It's about them feeling in game seven of the playoffs. They had 60 hits in game number two. That was 21 more than Edmonton. The margin increased greatly from the third period on. So, you know, Florida tries to wear you down. Edmonton has done a good job of handling the Florida pressure. What I do like with Edmonton is that they're resolved. You know, some will suggest that, oh, Florida's got the momentum after winning game two. I'll remind you, and I'll remind people what Corey Perry of the Oilers said after the loss in game number two. Hey, we lost to Vegas with 0.4 seconds left, and we bounced back quite nicely right after that. This team can park it and move on very quickly. So look, it's the fact that we're tied 1-1 in the series is exactly where it should be. You know, two overtime games. So 1-1 doesn't bother me, and I don't think it's going to bother the Oilers when they go on the road.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that as well, because with the Oilers, it's been such an interesting postseason for them, and their leader in the clubhouse for the Conn Smythe odds is right now, obviously, Connor McDavid. He's at a plus 105, but I want to ask you about Leon Draisaitl. He's right now sitting there at 7-1, because I do think that if there's one guy for the Oilers that presents value, it's him, especially with him being able to get that game one, game-winning goal. He has been so rock solid for the Oilers, and obviously with McDavid being the points leader, that does mean that it's going to be a little bit of a tough road for him to hoe, but still, I take a look at Leon Draisaitl at 7-1, and that does feel like some pretty solid value for him to be able to win the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Well, no, it is, and it's tremendous value. And Draisaitl's got three goals in the Stanley Cup Final. Greg, he didn't score a goal against Florida last year in the Cup Final. Now, for Connor McDavid, Greg, for anyone who didn't see it, go take a look at what Connor McDavid did to Alexander Barkov, who won the award this year as the NHL's best defensive forward, and what he did to Aaron Ekblad on the Edmonton goal that he set up to Leon Draisaitl. He undressed two of the best players in the NHL. He scored two of the biggest goals for the Oilers in the Dallas Stars series. So I've got a 15-1 ticket on Draisaitl in pocket. It's hard for me to ignore, even with Draisaitl's three goals, Greg, the impact that Connor has made, and not to any surprise, but I'm just saying, you know, this is as much as what Draisaitl has done in scoring goals. What Connor has done at some of the bigger moments of this series is hard to ignore, and I get why he is the favorite, but I would definitely want to have a Draisaitl ticket in play as well.
Yep, I am right there with you. I think that both of those guys have been so tremendous for the Oilers, and if the Oilers do win the Cup Final, obviously it would most likely go to McDavid, but I mean, if Draisaitl can have a few big games here, that's going to lend a lot of value. And how about if we do find the value here for game number three? What did you all settle on with regards to your bets for game number three, and maybe one or two that, if you have yet to bet it, maybe you're still considering it?
Well, look, I've gone to the well with playing both teams on the puck line. Now, they have not cashed in either of the first two games, but I do expect that we're going to get a game or two in this series that is not decided in overtime or decided by one goal. So maybe I'm a glutton for punishment. I mean, it was 11 straight and 20 of 22 games that were decided by two or more goals before we got to the final. I will go back with that prop, and look, I'll have to go. I have not taken a look at what the Sam Bennett number is for a goal. I know I did say that, you know, he's only got one home goal in the playoffs, but you know, it's still hard to ignore what he's doing. The other players to focus on, If you're looking for value, Evan Rodriguez of the Florida Panthers for an assist. He had two in game number two. He led the Panthers in points last year in the final against Edmonton. He's another one to target. And then DraftKings and a couple other spots are offering hits props. Evander Kane over 5.5 hits or Kasperi Kapanen over 4.5 hits are both plays to look at.
Playing the hits, I absolutely love it, Jonathan, and you do so every time you're on. Always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, Greg. Have a great rest of your night.
Always great to be able to get Jonathan Davis aboard. And how about if we go from the ice to the diamond? Coming up next, we'll take a look at some Sunday baseball as we are going to be trudging on the flip side here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.